This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 15th of April 2014 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Grundig. Hello and welcome to Section D, the hour we devote to the world of design each week here on Monocle 24. I'm your host, Tom Morris. Coming up today, we're back from Salone del Mobile in Milan, the design world's most important fair, with our arsenal full of wonder. In this show, we meet the organisers of some of the week's biggest events.
You have great showrooms like Floss and Moroso. You know, you step outside of the door and you have Giorgio Armani on your doorstep. So it's a more prestigious area, and we've noticed that we have better quality visitors through the door.
We chat to the designers presenting their wares there.
It's actually easier to do it with partners than not. You know, a lot of people think partnerships are hard. Doing something on your own is, I can tell you, a lot harder.
And to round it all off, we speak to one of the curators of an exhibition that provided a quiet moment of contemplation in a week of chaos.
We would like to see a bit of the background from the people whose work we admire and look at, and the work that surrounds us on a daily basis.
That's all here on Section D with me, Tom Morris, on Monocle 24. Welcome to our Salone del Mobile special on Section D. This year's event was bigger and more bombastic than ever. From Brera to Fiera, Lambrate to Tortona, the city came alive with design happenings, with everyone from fashion brands to car manufacturers now trying to get in on the act. Which made it even more difficult to unearth what we were all there for, to see good, solid design that will stand the test of time. Although it was inevitable to come away wondering if the world really needs another new Made in Italy modular sofa, there were real moments of brilliance throughout the week from both the established greats and some emerging talent. And if nothing else, its sheer scale showed how the industry is finally back on its feet after years of crisis, with all types of industries seeing design as an essential sector to begin engaging with. Creatively and commercially, Milan is still going strong. One of the more talked about collaborations in Milan this year pitted the playfulness of design studio Nendo's Occhi Sato with the simplicity of clothing brand COS. Section D's Ale John went down to speak to those behind the installation.
Hidden in a side street of the Brera design district, you may stumble across the peace and quiet of the COS and Nendo collaboration. Inside the installation, multiple white COS shirts occupy this large, otherwise empty space, framed by metal cube-like structures which hold the shirts in place without the use of obvious hangers. Thin metal tubing weave in and out of the shirts, themselves graded with straight lines of white to cobalt grey. This interaction between fashion and installation is a curious yet simple setup. COS's head of menswear, Martin Anderson, and womenswear, Karen Gustafsson, tell me the idea behind it.
The white shirt is core garment here at COS. It's about redesigning the wardrobe staples, reinventing them every season. We think that the white shirt is a multifunctional garment. You can wear it any occasion. It's like a white canvas. You can redesign it in so many different ways. And then when we come up to do this collaboration with Nendo, we tend to give the sort of designer carte blanche, as it were, so have quite free rein to interpret the brand. And he came to us with a suggestion of the white shirt, which we then were thrilled about, super excited that he kind of saw that kind of connection with us.
Looking at that collaboration, the white shirt is obviously very iconic, if you will, for COS. It's a very important and pure idea to an extent. What is it about Nendo's work and Occhi Sato's work that attracted you to collaborating with him, Karen?
We think he's always working with understated design, but really especially like his use of materials and surfaces. So, for example, downstairs, you know, we saw these glass tables that are in material glass, but they replicate the feeling of wood. And that feels really, really interesting.
So how do you kind of include that level of interest, that fun, the playfulness of that design into your clothing?
I mean, it's sort of about reimagining, you know, everyday garments for us, for Nendo's everyday items. And as Karin mentioned, you know, our design aesthetics tend to be focused around function and quite simple design. So it's so much about the materials.
Yeah, and also we like that sort of contrast. We love when a material looks in one way but feels in another way. And we're very much into fabrics and hand feels of fabrics. So the whole sort of tactility of materials are very important when we pick the materials for the garments.
Probably a good time to bring in Oki Sato. Let's talk about the white shirt. We've discussed it momentarily, but why was that an important thing for you to kind of hook the collaboration around?
When I was looking through the archives of the COS brand and the catalog, I noticed that by looking at the white shirts, you really understand the COS philosophy in a way. I think that was the most talkative piece in a way, so I wanted to have the white shirts talking in the space. That was the basic idea that I had behind this installation.
Let's talk, if we can, for a moment about some new projects, guys. Have you got anything coming up which you'd like the listeners to know of or be excited about, COS?
I think that the big thing for us now is that we're going into America this year for the first time. So, and last year we started a really exciting collaboration together with Opening Ceremony with Umberto and Carol there, and we did a pop-up store within their New York store. For the spring collection, we're taking to LA, to their LA store. We're also doing a collaboration together with Freeze Art Fair in May as well.
In New York.
In New York, exactly. So it's kind of a lot about America for us at the moment.
Downstairs, Oki Sato and I talk more broadly about his work, exhibited by itself in the basement of the installation.
Sometimes it's easier to find big ideas to make a big difference, but I think that it's the small differences that create big changes in the end. So I'm always looking for boring things. A lot of people ask me what inspires you the most, and I really feel that the things that inspire me the most is the things that don't inspire people at all. It's the boring things that is the most interesting for me. And by looking through at those boring things, sometimes I find these small moments that give people small smiles, and I think that is very important for my designs.
There's an element of playfulness to some of your designs, perhaps, and not subverting norms, but using, as you say, kind of the boring normality of certain things and turning it on its head a little bit. The chair made out of fishing line,
yes.
Or the glasses with magnets. Is that fair to say there's an element of playfulness in what you do?
Yes, definitely. I think it's that Japanese design or Japanese designers really think in a very simple way, a very minimalistic way. And it works for a lot of clients. But I think sometimes if it gets too minimal, it gets a little bit cold. The design, it's not really friendly to people. And I want to create a link between people and objects. And I sometimes feel that humor or these small surprises, these moments are like almost like spice that links people with objects together.
Could you provide a couple of examples of where you spice up some objects?
Well, for instance, the stool that we just presented from Emeco called Su, it is a very functional thing. It's a stool which you can change the seat from oak to aluminium, plastics, cork, and concrete. We have three different finishes for the legs as well, and three different heights. And the customers can mix and match the different colors and different materials. And if you take the seat off, you can stack the legs together. So it's something that is really functional. It's really Emeco. But what we tried to do was to connect the seat and the legs by using a single coin. A coin is something that everyone has in his pocket or something. So
coin for a screw, or
that's right. Okay. Yes, if you have a coin, you can change the seed, and I think those are the things that create a link or the friendliness in the design, and that is the most important thing for myself. Yes.
Looking at this installation, what's behind the idea? I know the white shirt is key to COS. It's a very important, very iconic thing for them. But why was this important for you?
Actually, the material. We used the white shirts as a material to create space, and that was something very new for us. We've never used shirts to create space, so it's something very different from what we've used in the past. For instance, the metal pipes, the frames, and the fabric, it's totally different. But we try to create a link between the two different materials, and it's almost impossible to control all the wrinkles and the forms and things like that, but we try to control the paint, which we did in our studio. So it's the balance between controlling something and leaving something alone. For instance, the space, I really loved the space when I first saw it. I think we kept the windows open because we really liked the way the shirts react to the natural light when you come in the morning or in the afternoon and nighttime. The space really changes, and I think it's the balance between controlling something and not controlling the rest. I'm really enjoying that.
Oki Sato of Nendo, ending that report by Alad there. We'll be back after this short break to hear from Discipline's Renato Preti.
For over six decades, Grundig has made people's lives better and simpler. To this day, we bring our expert knowledge of design and technology to a wide range of high-quality domestic appliances. Whether refrigerator or radio, oven or audio system, we continue to integrate our manufacturing heritage with state-of-the-art technology. Grundig synthesizes the best of yesterday with the best of tomorrow, expertly and innovatively designed for you and your home. Grundig. Supreme engineering, timeless design.
Welcome back to Section D's Salone del Mobile special. I'm Tom Morris. Discipline is one of the newest young pretenders on the Italian design scene. Established by Renato Preti just 2 years ago, the brand is committed to sustainability and natural materials and works with designers established and emerging, Italian and non. Its opening night soirees, hosted in its charming garden in the centre of town, has become one of the highlights of the Fiori Salone evening bashes. On Monday night, guests were treated to drinks and a saxophonist walking around serenading them, and plenty of great new products to ogle. Founder Renato Preti walked me through some of his favourite pieces there and discussed his dedication to doing things sustainably and, crucially, still stylishly.
Well, they are all my children, so all of them are my favorite, but especially they are all in line with our story, our values, that is about natural materials, sustainability, and beauty together. We are launching a collection by Alberto Lievore and Alter Molina, Spanish designers that are, I think, one of the most popular, more prestigious ones now in the world. They did a fantastic collection of chairs, stools, and tables in eucalyptus, which is a very sustainable wood because it grows so fast and kills all the kind of life in the forest. And it is a beautiful wood to look at. The chairs are very simple but with a strong character, like we like to be, and the price is very, very affordable considering that is high quality wood and high quality design. Then we are presenting, for instance, a table by Ras Beller, which has been awarded the prize for Designer of the Year by El Decor. He's Norwegian, very young, but growing very fast, and he did for us beautiful tables in Italian stone, pietra serena, and travertino, which are two Tuscany beautiful natural stones, and the base is in bay oak wood. And the interesting feature is that they travel flat pack, so you can assemble them in 10 seconds without screw and glue, and they're very stable thanks to the weight of the stone. Then we have a collection of chairs, also by Lars Beller, which is our best-seller designer. And they are dyed wood chairs. So the wood is not painted, it's dyed in water paint. So they are very sustainable, but also they look and they feel very natural. You can see the veneer of the wood. You can feel the special touch of the wood. But you can choose your favorite color. Mm. And then, well, we have many things, of course, but I'm very much in love with a collection of chopping boards or tray, you can use both ways, that have the shape of the pebbles in the beach, but they are made of wood or marble, black marble, and really have the shape of a pebble. I think they are very elegant and has been designed by a Japanese girl, a famous designer. She's called Nao Tamura, and I think they are really very emotional pieces.
It is quite amazing just the sort of the range of nationality of designers that you work with for a young, fundamentally Italian design brand. Is that, do you think, what sort of sets you apart?
Yeah, I think that we have a very strong identity, a very strong mission, which is, as I told you, natural materials, sustainability, but also beauty and high-end design. So we can afford to work with many different designers coming from many different cultural countries. So we can see how different cultures interpret, develop our philosophy. It's interesting to see how a Japanese designer is developing a product for us in natural materials or Italian materials like Carrara marble, or a Swedish one, or a Spanish, or a UK, or a US one, etc. It's very fascinating to see the different approach of different nationalities, because each one of them is bringing to our project their tradition, their history, their experience of their own nation, their own story. But everything is as a fil rouge, as a common denominator, which is our specific identity.
And do you, I mean, just going around Salone, the word sustainable has been a buzzword for many years now, but actually very few brands properly commit to sustainability. Would you agree? Or
yes, I think that in the past, or if you look around, sustainability has been developed as something that comes from recycled material, something that has not the pleasure, the value of high quality products or design. What we do is to focus on high quality, so we don't want our clients to make any compromise to be sustainable. So we choose the best material, the best copper, the best wood, the best wool, the best leather, but not having any kind of synthetic products. We are not introducing into the nature any new material, and we do products that can last theoretically forever. For instance, if we do a stool in metal, it's enamel, not painted. And enamel steel can last for centuries, like a copper product. If you use the wood, we use the stronger wood you can choose, like oak or eucalyptus, which is very strong. So we always try to develop things that last forever is a stupid thing to say, but last many, many, many decades. And I think that is the best way to be sustainable.
Mm. A lot of the designers you work with are, I wouldn't say emerging, but certainly sort of quite young into their careers. Do you believe a kind of younger generation of designer are rewriting the rule book on what sustainable design is, in the way that perhaps a more established designer sees it as a sort of an annoying compromise to make?
Of course, we choose the designer not because they are young or emerging or old, but because they have an history and they have an attitude which is in line with our story, with our brand. But yes, I must say that young designers, especially from Scandinavia, UK and US, are very much and much more than the older one used to be very, very careful about sustainability. So they consider it a must.
That was Renato Preti from Discipline talking to me there. Still to come, Yves Bahar tells Alad how he helped rejuvenate the SodaStream brand. And I hear about a new Georg Jensen Aldo Bakker line in tableware. All that and more coming up, but first, London's leading design trade fair, Design Junction, hosted its second show during this year's Salone del Mobile. In a new venue at the Palazzo Mirando off Via Sant'Andrea in the centre of town, Edit by Design Junction contained over 20 designers with a deliberately global range. Highlights included Resident from New Zealand, Hong Kong's EOQ and Flux from the UK. During the show, I caught up with the event director Deborah Spencer to discuss the trials and tribulations of exporting the show there, and also how London might one day replace Milan as the commercial centre of the European design business.
technically, we're in our third edition in Milan, but it was actually in 2010 that we launched it in Zona Tortona. And it was only 10 brands that were exclusively British, but what it did was it gave us an international presence in a really key market. And from that starting point, we decided to bring it to London, home territory. We felt that there was a gap in the market. London was missing something that sort of struck the balance between creative and commercial, but just had much more of a buzz and energy to it. So from that point, we last year went to Pallotta. This year came back to Palazzo Mirando. So we're now in our third year here in a much more interesting venue that's very historic. And it's become a much more international show.
When you're going around sort of, you know, selecting sites, what are you looking for? And how does where you host an event like this alter the sort of the atmosphere of the actual show itself?
I mean, we actually spend a lot of time looking for the right venue, because obviously we're trying to break the mold of the traditional trade show. We don't want to be in an exhibition centre. So it does involve looking at different places, but they have to have a sense that character. The backdrop of the venue is so important. So for here, we're in a historic 18th century building. And what it allows you to do is that each room gives every brand their own presence. So you feel like a sense of discovery, you can go through the different rooms, and then you have this kind of central social space in the main courtyard. But equally, in London, you know, we found this sorting office venue, and whilst it's 120,000 square foot space, it's very gritty and industrial, so you have a contrast between pristine furniture and it's kind of gritty backdrop.
Yeah.
So the venue has to, it's got to have some type of character and not to feel corporate.
When you are hosting in a place like this, what are the sort of permissions that you need to do to sort of prop everything up? I mean, are they quite sort of lenient with what you can do, or is there a lot of Italian paperwork?
Yes, it's the answer to that. And actually, although London is much bigger than our Milan show, because we have 25 brands here versus 150, the amount of paperwork is it's very difficult, it's very challenging. And I think it's been particularly difficult this year because we're in a museum. So you have to be really sensitive to the fact that, you know, it's a listed building. They're very protective of everything from the kind of stained glass windows to the pebble flooring. And it's been probably the most challenging venue I've ever worked in. And I don't even want to bore you with all the detail, but it's been really hard, really hard. And it's quite nice when people sort of recognise that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's back in central Milan now. How do you think that sort of changed the character of the show? And it's kind of standing now in Design Week here.
I think it's actually really, really important for us to be in the centre of town. Purely because, you know, we were in Tortona and it was great. And there's a kind of, you know, you have so many visitors that come through the door, but they're not necessarily the right quality. And I think for us, we want to be surrounded by the right brand. So you have great showrooms like Floss and Moroso. You know, you step outside of the door and you have Giorgio Armani on your doorstep. So for us, we just feel it's better alignment, it's a more prestigious area, and we've noticed that we have better quality visitors through the door.
So let's go through, not all 25, but some of your favourites that are showing here.
There's a really interesting mix this year in terms of there's a lot of brands from all different countries. I think a few highlights for me is we have EOQ, who are from Hong Kong, and that was a brand launched by Michael Young. They're launching a new kind of furniture and lighting collection, through to Innermost, who have been with us from the very start, quite a quirky collection of products. There's also a lovely brand called Resident, who are from New Zealand, quite a sort of simplistic collection of work. But actually another sort of interesting one for us is we have a brand called Afghan Made, who have linked up with design carpet companies in the UK like Christopher Farr and Matt Cameron, and worked with traditional craftsmen in Afghan and sort of taken their heritage and their skill sets and produced beautiful rugs that are all on display there. From Shanghai, we have Stella Works, who have a really beautiful collection of furniture and a really stunning collection of porcelain pieces.
Which the other night there was quite a beautiful event going on, wasn't there?
Yeah, they had a ceremony where they were sort of serving food and sake, and they also had a guy who was actually painting on the porcelain, and just you could see how painstakingly difficult it was, and there was a lady there just kind of explaining the process, which I think actually just sort of created drama within the space. It was great.
When you're doing your edit and sort of pinning down 25 companies that you'll work with to show here, how do you go about making sure there's a range of nationalities, a range of products on show? Is that a concern?
It's a very different type of selection process to London, because a lot of the international brands, especially the Italian ones, all have a presence here. So what we find is that we tend to attract brands that are sort of further afield. So I was mentioning Shanghai, and I was mentioning New Zealand and Hong Kong. You've got to be very careful to kind of strike the balance and get the right mix of brands. So it's a combination of, if people apply to do the show, there's a selection process that we have to go through. And then other times we go out and we find those brands. So we visit all the trade shows all over the world to try and select the right type of brands to do it.
I was talking the other night to Marina from UKTI about their involvement with Design Junction this year.
Yes.
And she was quite interesting talking about elevating the esteem of British brands in Italy.
Yeah.
What's your kind of comment on that? Obviously, you know, there are many other international brands, but bringing sort of quite a British thing over, you know, to Milan.
I think it's actually really important, because it's such a, it's a kind of global centre. You've got people travelling from all over the world, and I think it's important to have a British presence. And, you know, we're a British company, so from that side. And also the UKTI are very supportive and actually help fund British business over here. So they play quite a pivotal role in it. And they've curated quite an interesting exhibition that looks at kind of sustainability and design. And they've approached some key brands like SCP and Urkel, who probably wouldn't normally have a presence on an off-site event because they're in the main fair. So it just gives the kind of British community a bigger presence.
From the beginning of the summer to the end of the summer, you must be focusing back on London now. What's your plan for that this year?
Absolutely. So for us, London will always be our flagship show, and it does take a year of planning. And in a way, for us, you know, Milan is a great marketing tool to promote Design Junction in London, to build up a really strong network of people that we can attract to the UK. You know, we've got to fill this space with 150 brands, so it's a lot of work, and we're kind of halfway there, and we've just been looking at how we can just sort of move the show on, but without changing too much this year.
You're back in the sorting office?
Back at the sorting office. This year we are opening up the basement so that we have a dedicated lighting area. We created a theme last year called Light Junction, which pulled in so many international brands. And this area, it's very dark, it's perfect for installations, and it just gives them a dedicated presence within the show. On the ground floor, we've got a sort of market-style retail area, and then on the other side, it's very much kind of high-end, brand-led companies that are coming in this year. And then the first floor feels a bit more like galleries, and then the top floor is very contract furniture. So there's kind of, every single floor has a different feel to it.
What do you think the atmosphere has been like at this year's Milan? Has it been successful, do you think, for young brands? Is it sort of bouncing back, the market here?
It's a very difficult one to answer until the end of the show, but we've had a lot of visitors through the door. We can only judge it from kind of feedback from exhibitors in terms of meeting the right people. Brands that we know that are in the fair are doing a lot of business. So I think actually there has been a shift, and I think that people are doing more business than perhaps maybe the last 2-3 years. But I actually think that London is becoming such a strong focus now that I think there might come a time where maybe London will become the centre of doing a lot of business and design. Just because we're at the, you know, we're right at the heart of it, great transport links from all over the world. So that's what I'm potentially looking forward to, if there can be a shift on that side.
That was Deborah Spencer, Event Director of Design Junction at the Palazzo Mirando in Milan. And one of the exhibits taking centre stage at the Design Junction space was the revamped SodaStream brand, complete with the chance to assemble your own colourful version of the machine. Ala John went down to meet the designer credited with bringing the fizz back to the brand, Yves Bahar, and to assemble his own.
SodaStream has achieved something of a resurgence of late. No longer the preserve of your grandparents, they have a new tagline, a new, mildly controversial ad campaign.
If only I could make this message go viral.
Whoa, you doing it, Scarlett. Yeah, you doing it. Changing the world, one sip at a time.
Sorry, Coke and Pepsi.
Oh yeah, she done it.
And a new design, helping it dust off the grey of yesteryear. Now it's a symbol of cool sustainability. To find out more about this journey, I caught up with Joran Koppel, chief of SodaStream's innovation and design, and the man behind the product's new look, renowned designer Yves Bahar. Joran tells me first why he commissioned Yves in the first place.
We were looking for somebody very talented to help us transform the way you make beverage at home. We're trying to revolutionize a whole category. We're saying that 50 years ago, you wouldn't buy bottles. You would go to store and they would prepare the soda right there in the store. So trying to make this revolution, we really need to simplify each and every element of the experience. And we also need to make it beautiful and lovable. And to make all this process, we need a different kind of designer. Someone that not only looks at the shapes and colors, but also on the way the machine behaves and the user behaves. So after a really long search, I found Yves, and we've been partnering ever since, and he's been such a viable player in transforming the whole experience of SodaStream in a way which has been unbelievable. I mean, the source that Yves designed just won 17 design awards last year, including Red Dot, IF, and many others, almost anywhere around the world. The great thing about it, if you think about the user experience, it won so many categories of electrical machines, and it's the only machine in the category which is not electric.
Thankfully, the man responsible for that feat of engineering is on hand. SodaStream's head of engineering and research and development, Avi Cohen.
This unit is based on mechanical activities only. No electricity, no battery, no mains. And actually, the principle of this unit is based on all other soda machines, where you have a source of CO2 in liquid phase with vapor pressure above it. And by pressing the block, we are actually releasing gas of CO2 from high pressure source into the bottle through the head of carbonation and through the carbonation orifice here, which is a very, very small orifice. And during the process, the set of valves locating inside here responsible to release the excess of pressure to atmosphere. So actually we are operating from high source of pressure, which is almost 60 bars, and we are releasing the pressure to 8 bars, which is the process pressure.
So why was SodaStream, a project renowned designer Yves Bahar was interested in getting involved with?
For many reasons, SodaStream was exactly the right partner for me. I do like to partner with companies who are challenger companies and, you know, also who have an ethical kind of mission in many ways. So on the challenger side, you know, you have a world of bottled water to challenge, right? All these silly bottles that are shipped all the way from Italy to around the world and even Fiji, right? On the other side, you know, my equation is this is a company that's really trying to change the way we consume. We consume and we waste a lot of bottles, and SodaStream is challenging that. So between those two opportunities are unique, and I felt that my design work and in partnering with them, we could amplify that and maybe make it in, you know, 10, 15 years the default by which people consume sparkling water and sodas.
Yves Bahar, can you perhaps talk specifics in terms of the design that we see here before us? The colors, obviously, very striking.
Sure.
Tell the listener what they can find if they went to the shop and bought a new model, for instance.
Making it easily customizable, making it very approachable, so, you know, not expensive, essentially. Those were, you know, sort of two criterias. Then we had to break the parts, you know, into three that really made sense, create very monolithic, very totemic, you know, type geometry, and, you know, really make it something that you recognize at an instant. You know, you walk into a kitchen and you recognize it, whether it's all in white, which you can still get it all in white, or if it's in, you know, yellow, blue and green, you'll know immediately that this is from, you know, from SodaStream.
Well, with all this talk of accessible design, let's put one together. Avi Cohen helps me assemble one of the new bright yellow models. So at the moment we're looking at the skeleton,
yes,
as it were, the white undercasing which houses the bottle inside.
This is for the gas cylinder, yes, it is connected by the thread to inside,
yeah.
And by pressing the block, actually we are moving the lever,
okay,
down to press the pin located inside the head, and this pin actually is pressing the pin which is located on the cylinder valve to open the valve and to release the pressure, the gas pressure from the valve to the system. Then the pressure is moving all the way through these black pipes through the orifice into the bottle.
It's extremely functional, the simple casing hiding the complexities of the engineering within. So which came first, the function or the aesthetic? Yves Behar explains.
This is like an age-old debate that exists since industrial design was even invented. And for me, there is actually the emotional part, you know, the way the product feels, like the whole experience, the way it feels and looks, has actually functional benefits in many ways. And if you resolve the function in ways that is going to be this fluid, it actually has emotional benefits and even cosmetic benefits. So I really don't see the two as separate at all. We partnered very closely with the engineers at SodaStream who are like incredibly talented. I mean, some of the magic that Yaron was just describing about the product doing so many things and it makes you feel like it's electrified, even though it does everything out of perpetual motion or using the gas as sort of the fuel for that motion. It really comes from this really close partnership between the notion of creating the simplest possible experience and at the same time, you know, a design and a package that's going to be beautiful.
Are you happy with the finished product?
It's never a finished product. This is a question that I'm always asked, right? It's like, I still work on, you know, the sail chair for Herman Miller, even though it launched 3 years ago. There's still ways to kind of tweak and make it better, but I'm happy where it's now. And, you know, to continue on the previous thread, it's always hard to do something well, always. You know, my favorite quote there is that pain is temporary, but suck is forever. And so doing something that will be really good, that will be almost perfect, is always a tremendous amount of work.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24. After the break, continue our reports from this year's Salone del Mobile. I speak to Aldo Bakker about his new range of tableware for George Jensen.
A careful balance between power and proportion is key to the success of Grundig's expert designs. The innovative Ovation Hi-Fi system radiates expansive sound from the most micro of machines. With its Magic Fidelity sound concept, the compact disc and iPod player is designed for the ultimate listening experience in your home, bringing big sound into small spaces. Grundig, supreme engineering, timeless design.
Welcome back to our Salone del Mobile special on Section D. To mark its 110th anniversary, which it celebrates this year, Danish silverware brand George Jensen presented two new sets of works last week. Not only was there a beautiful set of cutlery by Danish designer Louise Campbell, but also three new pieces by Dutch maestro Aldo Bakker. Overlooking the sunny courtyard at Spazio Rosana Orlandi, I chatted with Aldo about his collaboration with the George Jensen brand and how to make an eye-catching presentation.
When they set up this living department within Georg Jensen, they set up a program or a line of designers that they wanted to collaborate with. I think the reason why they approached me is to add something to this wonderful legacy of Georg Jensen. Pieces that can last, that are not bound to a fashionable wave, but are bound to last. So a deep investment.
Yeah. Do you feel kind of, when you do something like this with such a brand, with such an amazing history, celebrating its 110th anniversary this year, is there a sort of pressure you feel upon you to sort of deliver through their message of heritage, but make something very contemporary and very now that, you know, a sort of living art, a living designer can do?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why the first thing I said, I'm happy. I'm relieved. When I think of Georg Jensen, then I think mostly about the creations of Henning Koppel. I think he is very important for the legacy, the history, culture of Georg Jensen. And I like them a lot. I think that are very strong creations. And that is for me a very flattering something that I'm invited and that I allowed or free to contribute to this. And I believe it's very important that if you start such a journey that you... Well, it has to be an investment from both sides. Mm. It was a very pleasurable collaboration, and the objects should as much represent Georg Jensen as that they also should represent me.
Yeah.
This is another one that I should not speak more about, but I feel good about it. I feel quiet.
Yeah.
Yes.
So tell us, can you talk us through for the listeners the pieces you're presenting here?
Yeah, so four pieces came out. We started with more, which you always do, because production is a world on its own. And we ended up with four products, a water pitcher, a little salt container, which is called E. And it is called E because there is a line and a little opening where the salt comes from. And there is this geometrical volume that hangs over the line. That's why the line becomes visible. Well, that's where the title comes from. Then we have a sugar dispenser, existing out of two containers. And we have the oil pipe, all made from steel. The oil pipe is the only one which is from cast steel. Wow. And that's why this one looks, it has this sandy surface texture and this very deep black brownish color. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy with that one.
Yeah.
What I like about that piece is that you find a triangular shape which doesn't invite you immediately to approach it, because it's finished. You have this closed triangular shape. But then if you dare to and you investigate, then you will see that you can take off the lid, and so you open the triangular shape, so it becomes approachable for use.
Yeah.
And from that moment it transforms from an object into a product.
And tell us through how you presented them here at Rossano Rolandi, which is a very sort of clever take on the use of tableware like this.
With the presentation, yeah. The presentation is done by my girlfriend, Brecht Duif, and a very dear friend, Lenneke Langehuizen. Together they formed the Bureau Belen, and they have a presentation themselves also here in Milan at Palazzo Clerici.
Okay.
And they came up with the idea to put the pieces themselves in their own content. Mm-hmm. So this time, only this time, I hope it's the content that is on the table and the objects are standing within. So you see the oil pipe standing in a lake of oil, the pitcher in an aquarium, which I like really a lot. That's a big surprise, because it intensifies the piece and it makes it so quiet, beautiful. And the little salt piece, it's a shy character, and I like it that it makes these enormous hills and it almost hides behind it. And we have the sugar one, which is balancing on its own beam of sugar.
So,
I think I like it a lot, and the reactions are great.
That was Aldo Bacca talking me through his new collaboration with Georg Jensen. You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24. Design Week in Milan is a hectic affair, but tucked into small corners of Brera or Lambrate, there are still great pockets of calm. One such moment took place at the Source Material exhibition. Taking place at New Gallery Kaleidoscope, the show is organised by Marco Velardi, Jasper Morrison and Jonathan Olivares. The trio invited a series of well-known figures, not just from the world of design, but also fashion, cuisine and photography, to choose one thing that helped shape the way they work. These 54 pieces, including a wooden bowl from David Chipperfield and a tape from Naoto Fukasawa, were then displayed in two glass vitrines. I chatted to co-curator and industrial designer Jonathan Olivares about the thoughts behind the exhibition and what insight it gives into the working process of many of the designers displaying their wares elsewhere in the city during the week.
Jasper, Marco and myself, we each took about a third of the number of people. I think we each approached it a little bit differently, but in the end we wanted all these people to be together. And we looked at, for myself, I was very curious to understand what's happening in architecture and what's happening in art in my immediate group of peers, and also in people whose work I respect on an international level. Yeah, so I reached out to a number of people in those fields, and I think the important thing was really to see, in a way, we asked people, but we didn't know what we would get. So in a way, it's a show curated by 54 people, which you don't see every day.
Can you talk me through some of the, there's a really sort of strange bunch of things here. Can you talk me through some of your sort of most interesting, perhaps, inspirations that are here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the some of these things are objects that people found, some are things that people read, and some of the most intriguing are accidental objects. So KK Barrett, the production designer in Los Angeles, who most recently worked on Her and has done films like Lost in Translation and Being John Malkovich, he gave us an accidental sculpture, which is, for KK, this accidental sculpture was basically, you know, he has a background as a musician. He was very active in the punk scene in Los Angeles in the 70s. And so this, these two elements, one is an object to make sound and one is an object to stop sound. It's a trombone mouthpiece and a trumpet mute. Now, I know very little about music, so excuse me, but these two things, basically, they cancel each other out. You know, one makes sound, the other cancels sound. And one day, as he describes it, he was trying to store them neatly somewhere, and he put them together, one fit very snugly inside the other, and all of a sudden he had this wonderful, surprising thing of this kind of the tension between the two objects. And so he keeps them around, and they remind him that this kind of tension should exist in work on an everyday basis.
And here we find ourselves in front of your personal inspiration. Do you talk us through how this came about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that's most fascinating about the show is that everyone is so tied to their time and place. I mean, every object we got from everyone, they either write about where they found it on their travels or how they grew up or where they studied and how they encountered and where they encountered this object. I think time and place is really important. And so when I chose my own object, I thought about like my own upbringing and how that might have tied into my work now. And I remembered, I grew up I was skateboarding in my teens and in the city of Boston. And so skateboarding for me was really a multidisciplinary activity. I learned to shoot photography, I learned to film and edit video, and I learned to look at architecture because you had to scope out the best spots. And so these are 1980s skateboard rails, which, you know, they weren't very cool actually. They were the kind of thing that would come on a toy skateboard. So you would only know what these objects were if you were, you know, beginning skateboarding in the late 80s. And they were obsolete by the 90s. So I ended up using them or recycling them later on, just a few years ago. We adapted them for use on an aluminum chair that I designed for Noel. And they go underneath the chair to help the chair stack while it's stacking from scratching itself. Wow. So again, this time and place. You know, if I hadn't been a beginner skateboarder in the late 80s, I never would have known about this object. And when it came down to making my chair, I never would have been able to hijack them for use. The exhibition design was really born out of the space here, Kaleidoscope Gallery. It's a new gallery they just opened about a month ago, and it's a traditional white cube space. So when we were working on the vitrines, we were very conscious of that, and also very aware of the fact that this is not a kind of design exhibition in the sense of what you typically see during the Salone del Mobile. We have here some artists of really incredible accomplishment, and we also have philosophers and thinkers. And so it's an exhibition that had to feel somehow apart from the furniture showrooms. Mm. And so we were very aware of that. Also, we have a lot of objects here that are very precious to people. Mm. Some people, upon choosing their object and then realizing that we were going to ship them to Milan, said, "Oh, no, 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 I can't give you that." You know, yeah. So we had to then convince and say, "Please and please." And so Erwan Borlak, for instance, he was going to give us his sewing machine and then realized actually he can't because he uses it every day. So he gave us his mother's, which is even more precious because it's the first sewing machine he ever saw. And like that, we have some objects here that are extremely precious to people. So we had to protect them and so on. The next concern was about conviviality within this space. I mean, we wanted people to be able to walk around and each have a little bit of a view to themselves in a way. Mm-hmm. So then we ended up with the two vitrines. And the interesting thing about installing in these two vitrines was that we had never seen all of the objects together at one time in the same place until we started installing. And so then starts the chemistry between objects. And that's an incredible thing to play with. And yeah. So we began arranging the things, placing them next to each other, which is a very difficult task because some chemistry is fantastic and some chemistry can actually be flat. And so one of the things that helped us a lot was grouping things not by color or shape, but actually by acquaintances, you know, people who may know each other or be related to each other in one way or have influenced each other's work. And so that then led the way to this kind of very natural display of things that are somehow related on an intellectual level, but maybe not related on an aesthetic level.
was designer Jonathan Olivares, co-curator of the delightful Source Material exhibition in Milan, bringing us to the end of this week's Section D. Next week, we'll have part two of our Salone del Mobile special. Please tune in for that. Today's show was produced by Aled John and edited by Holly Fisher. You can contact the producer Aled at awj@monocle.com should you feel the need. I'm Tom Morris. And playing you out, a little bit of Italian melodrama to mark a fruitful yet frenetic week at Salone del Mobile in Milan. This is Mina with Non Credere. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye.